Hi, boys and girls. Like you, Santa is listening to the Merry Little Podcast of MyMerryChristmas.com. Oh, 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 oh.
Jingle bell, jingle bell, jingle bell, jingle bell rock.
Greetings and welcome to the Merry Little Podcast. My name is Jeff Westover, lead flag waver at the Merry Forums of MyMerryChristmas.com, where we have been celebrating Christmas together online since 1991. Christmas, of course, is what we celebrate year-round, but we are not shy in giving a nod to other holidays on the calendar throughout the year, and none is bigger to me than Independence Day, a time of great celebration in my home and in the history of my family. As Americans, we cherish the tradition of the birth of our nation nearly as much as we celebrate the birth of Christ at Christmas. I fear there is no longer the love of history I was raised with. The heralded traditions of Christmas are not alone in their mystery to a rising generation who sets off fireworks without much thought or appreciation for what it all really means. One of the more fun traditions we have with the 4th of July is the annual playing of the musical 1776, which endeavors to tell the American story through humor and song, such as this little number performed by the central characters of Benjamin Franklin, John Adams, and Thomas Jefferson.
Now then, attend, as friend to friend, our Declaration Committee. For us I see immortality.
In Philadelphia City.
A farmer, a lawyer, and a sage. A bit gouty in the leg. You know, it's quite bizarre to think that here we are, playing midwives to an egg.
Egg? What egg?
America, the birth of a new nation.
Only we can be sure of what kind of a bird it's going to be.
Tom has a point. What sort of bird shall we choose as the symbol of our new America?
The eagle.
The dove.
The turkey.
The eagle.
The dove.
The eagle.
The eagle. The turkey.
The eagle is a majestic bird.
The eagle is a scavenger, a thief, and a coward. A symbol of over 10 centuries of European mischief.
The turkey?
The turkey is a truly noble bird. Native American, source of sustenance of our original settlers. An incredibly brave fellow who will not flinch at attacking a regiment of Englishmen, single-handedly. Therefore, the national bird of America is going to be...
The eagle!
The eagle!
Historians will be quick to tell you that Christmas in colonial America was not a universal fact, and I'm not sure I agree with that. In fact, I strongly disagree with it given all the evidence lying about of Christmas celebration during the 1600s and 1700s in America. Granted, Christmas then is not what Christmas is now. That's the thing about Christmas. It is constantly celebrated, but forever evolving. But historians will tell you that the Puritan colonies of New England eschewed Christmas and saw it as an abomination, one of their many grievances with the Church of England that caused them to rebel in England in the 1600s. They will famously point to the abolition of Christmas in public and the famous handbills printed back then to wave under our noses today. They will point out that there were no Christmas trees, no Santa Claus, no Christmas gift giving. In fact, there were very few of the Christmas hallmarks of our time even thought of in colonial Christmas. So they conclude, with absolution, that there just was no Christmas back then. Well, I thought it would be fun, even interesting, to explore a little bit the Christmas history of some of the earliest patriots in American history, some of the bigger names, just to see if it was even on their radar. And I will exclude the key figure of the great George Washington, a man I revere like few others in the history of the world. Washington was very famously a celebrant of Christmas, and his parties of the season at Mount Vernon, long before the Revolution, were famous for their Christmas flavor. He was not only the father of our country, but one of the primary reasons we even have eggnog as a holiday tradition in America. It could be argued that Washington was on the Christmas forefront in America when he took up the fight against Hessian mercenaries that Christmas of 1776. What did he see there across the Delaware? Well, those were Christmas trees, erected as a matter of tradition from these German enemies. How was Washington to know that they would become a thing of American Christmas tradition? No, I'll leave Washington out of it, if only because he's not singing the song you just heard. Let's just talk about Christmas with Adams, Franklin, and Jefferson. Three of our greatest, perhaps maybe even unknown, and most celebrated of patriots, who we celebrate this 4th of July as we do every year. That's the 1906 Edison Singers with Joy to the World, arguably one of the biggest Christmas hits of the 1700s, a song documented as being part of Christmas celebrations all over America in a time long before Dickens, long before Clement Moore, and long before Christmas trees, Christmas cards, or Christmas lights. Perhaps even the song was part of the celebrations of Jefferson, Franklin, and Adams. It should first be noted that these three men could not be more different from each other, although they were all contemporaries. John Adams was a second-generation North American, a New Englander of the First Order. His great-grandfather emigrated to Massachusetts during the Great Migration of the 1630s, and it was into this Puritan society of New England that gave John Adams his values, his stubborn nature, and his brilliance, I think. Adams was educated, opinionated, and fiercely spiritual. Ironically, later in life, Adams abandoned much of his religious upbringing to embrace Unitarianism, a faith that questioned the divinity of Christ. It denied the Trinity, and it abandoned traditional Christmas, or rather Christian ideals of eternal damnation and predestination. Of religion, Adams once famously said to Jefferson in a letter, "Without religion, this world would be something not fit to be mentioned in polite company. I mean hell," he said. Despite all of this, Adams was very famously celebrated each and every Christmas with family gatherings at the Adams home in Braintree, Massachusetts. It was the great New England way. This was just the way that they did it. Christmas was a time of year to gather in family like they gathered in the harvest, a great Thanksgiving with the feasting of all by all. They would bring in the grandparents and the cousins and the uncles and the aunts, and there would be feasting, music, and prayer. It was, in those colonial times, simply how the year ended in New England, and the Adams family celebrated it famously. As president, you will hear record of John Adams and family being the first to occupy the White House, and how the first Christmas party held at the White House was held under their direction. A big deal is made of this, and I suppose as a history of the White House, it's necessary that we should recall it, but that event, which was more of a birthday party for a four-year-old little girl, was hardly reflective of the feelings and traditions of Christmas as held by John and Abigail Adams and family. Politically, there was no one more opposite John Adams than Thomas Jefferson. But modern history seems to whitewash the connections between Adams and Jefferson because they famously became fast friends in their old age after years of bitter division, and they died on the same day, July 4, 1826. The complex truth about Jefferson and Adams is that they were adversaries and admirers, both brilliant each in their own way and unique from each other as could be. Jefferson was a Southerner, and he had nothing of Adams' New England humility. He was aristocracy, if such could be defined in the American colonies of the 1700s. Though he himself listed his occupation as a farmer, it was the will of his father that Thomas Jefferson become educated, and that set him on a course that would influence the history of the man, his family, and ultimately his country. Interestingly enough, Jefferson, like Adams, strayed from his Christian upbringing. He did not abandon Christianity as much as he tried to redefine it, both for himself and for generations to follow. He had a mistrust of clergy, once even espousing the idea that maybe clergy should be banned from holding public office, a stance that he later backed off of. But like Adams, he renounced the Trinity. But he took it much further, looking to kind of rewrite the Bible to remove references to the miracles of Jesus, focusing instead on his moral teachings. Like Adams, he viewed religion as a cause for much of the discord in the world, and he looked to refine it. Christmas, however, was another story altogether. The journals and many surviving letters of Thomas Jefferson reveal a steady pattern of the celebration of Christmas festively, including the yearly bestowal of gifts on those that he loved. That was not a very common practice in the 1700s, and it was certainly more of a southern tradition than in other areas of the colonies at that time. Christmas, Jefferson said, was a time of merriment, a time of visiting and being visited. As such, food was gathered, decorations were hung, music was played and sung, and people gathered to socialize. Where Jefferson differed from Adams was that it wasn't limited to just family. He celebrated Christmas with the neighbors, his slaves, the visiting rich and famous, and all that cared to call on him at that time of the year. Benjamin Franklin was more than a generation older than both Adams and Jefferson. He was the grandson of English immigrants who also came to Boston in the 1630s. Franklin was perhaps destined to be a man of words from an early age as a printer's apprentice to his older brother, who admittedly didn't let him do very much. That's why Ben wrote under the name of Silence Duguid, whose newspaper column was quite famous for making people talk around town. That seems to be Franklin's particular gift and ability to make people talk. In later years, Franklin built his wealth on printing and was famous under a number of names, including the name of Poor Richard. It was under this name that Franklin famously said of Christmas, "How many observe Christ's birthday, how few his precepts." That quote from the 1740s is actually quite educational. First of all, it speaks of how many actually celebrated Christmas in those times and why they celebrated it, a fact that modern historians just flat out deny. But more importantly, it speaks to the overall religious nature of Benjamin Franklin. Born of Puritan ancestry and baptized in Boston's Old South Church, Franklin lived a life ruled by religious contrast. While he clung to morality in terms of teaching and lecturing, his own life was marked by challenges with moral living, bringing both illegitimate children into the world and suffering from a lifelong struggle with womanizing. Christmas to Franklin, and whatever made up his household, was famously documented in what was then Middle America in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. He welcomed family, neighbors, and friends to celebrate the festive season, much like Jefferson did. In fact, the Christmas of 1750 was marked with plans, as many Christmases of the time were, with the plans to cook a turkey. But Franklin, the inventor of the stove, famous for his experiments in electricity, thought, why not kill a turkey with electricity, perhaps even cook it with electricity? He thought that process might work and, in fact, produce a more tender bird for the Christmas celebration. So he took two jars of electrified water, called Leyden jars, after the university in Holland where they were invented. Now, these are larger and more powerful than he normally used in his experiments, writing that they contained 40 vials of the stuff. He held in one hand two united wires and in the other a chain connected to the outside of the jars. You get the picture? Well, according to the Christmas celebrants who were there to pass Christmas with Franklin, there was a great flash and they heard a loud crack, and Franklin was knocked senseless. The turkey, by the way, survived long enough to be roasted in the usual way. And that, my friends, brings us back to the little song from 1776 played at the top of this episode, where Jefferson's, Adams, and Franklin debate the new national bird. For all the fun of the song there is, in the end, an element of truth. Franklin really did want the turkey to be America's national bird. He wrote, For in truth, the turkey is, in comparison, a much more respectable bird. And with all the true original native of America, he is, though a little vain and silly, it is true, but not the worst emblem for that, a bird of courage, and would not hesitate to attack a grenadier of British guards, who would presume to invade his farmyard with the red coat on.
We're waiting for the chirp, chirp, chirp of an eaglet being born. Waiting for the chirp, chirp, chirp on this humid Monday morning in this congressional incubator.
God knows the temperature's hot enough to hatch a stone, let alone an egg.
We're waiting for the scratch, scratch, scratch of that tiny little fellow. Waiting for the egg to hatch on this humid Monday morning in this congressional incubator. God knows the temperature's hot enough to hatch a stone, but will it hatch an egg?
The movie is called 1776, and it dates from the early 1970s, and it's based on a Broadway musical of the same name. This song and the movie stars William Daniels, Howard Da Silva, and Ken Howard, who, by the way, is a great singer. And if you've never seen it, please gather your millennials and give them a little bit of fun history, even if it has a few minor inaccuracies. And may you, no matter where you are, enjoy a great Independence Day this year, and remember these great American patriots were all lovers of Christmas and celebrated it grandly. For all of us at the Merry Forums of MyMerryChristmas.com, this is Jeff Westover wishing you and yours a very Merry Christmas.